morning. How great thou art. You know, how can we not live in this beautiful, beautiful part of the world and not know there is a God? But yet there are times we can drive by the ocean, drive through the valleys, see the rivers, see the trees, hear the rain falling, and not think of God. But how can we not know? Our God is an awesome God, and we are surrounded by such awesome wonders, the wonders of God's creation, of this great earth that He created. And how can we not know that there is a God? But this past week, I was blessed to drive through a couple different parts of God's awesome wonder of Oregon. Drove up the Willamette Valley to Camp Yamhill for a preacher's seminar. And loved driving the Umpqua River, one of my favorite parts to drive. And then getting through the hills and the mountains. And after a while, you know, it kind of just all looks the same and you kind of lose all of it. And I was listening to some podcasts. I had my earbuds in, and I don't know if that's legal here in Oregon to drive with earbuds, but I heard it's illegal to have really dark tint on your windows, so I had to take care of that. But had my earbuds in, catching up on some lessons and podcasts I've gotten behind on. But then I got past Corvallis, and the valley just opened up. And I was an awesome wonder. And I threw those earbuds out and go, this is it. This is it. How great thou art. God is awesome. It made me think about how awesome God's creation is. And this weekend we went up to Lincoln City and back for Finley's, one of them, Finley's birthday. And just the beauty of the waves, the tide was high and the crashing waves and just the awesome wonder. But yet, after seeing a little while, you kind of lose the wonder and your mind begins to wander to different things and lose track of that. But as I was driving both of those times, also thinking about the awesome wonder of the church and of this body of believers that get to be a part of. It's an awesome wonder that God created all of you and all of us and that we are here together when we in this place and that we are here now. It's an awesome wonder that who is here today. It's a great gathering, and hope that you feel the fellowship and the love of one another, that God created this and created us to be together in our unique ways and our diversity and the complexities of each of our lives and brings us together this way. And, you know, I stand in awe, and I hope that you can stand in awe of God each day. You know, there's some awesome wonders that you probably have seen, and when you've seen them, you think, boy, you've got to see this. You know, you've got to at some point stand on a mountain. You got to at some point, now you've seen the ocean, but if you meet someone who's never seen it, you've got to tell them you've got to see the ocean. You've got to. There's probably some awesome wonders you've seen, maybe some awesome landforms or creations. But in the history of our world, there have been people who have classified the seven wonders of the world. And these are the seven wonders of the ancient world. And this is kind of you see they're a little cleaned up. This isn't how they look today, if they're even, most of them are not in existence today. But this cleaned up version, I wonder if you can point out any of these, give you a little test, see if you can locate. You get seven choices. The Colossus of Rhodes, a statue of the Greek sun god Helios, built in the city of Rhodes, nearly 100 feet high. The Great Pyramid of Giza, which actually is one of the very few that are still standing in Egypt. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, whether they were real or not, built in 600 or 700 B.C., Lighthouse of Alexandria, built around 280 B.C. It at that time stood 400 feet tall, was the tallest building in the world for centuries. The mausoleum at Halicarnassus is the tomb built for Mausolus around 350 B.C. in Turkey. Statue of Zeus at Olympia stood over 40 feet tall, representing Zeus on a cedar throne. And the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus, located in eastern Turkey. Maybe you're able to identify, I've heard of some of these through your studies in history. The seven wonders of, let's say, the modern world, some of these may become a little familiar. The Great Wall of China, stretching the structure 4,000 miles, and there's a couple thousand more miles of natural barrier that the wall encompasses of mountains and landforms. There's the Jordan's ancient rock city, which is the carved city of Petra, a wonder that you've got to see. You may be familiar with, after this year being Olympic year in Brazil, of seeing the Brazil statue of Christ the Redeemer, standing 98 feet tall and 92 feet wide. Hilltop city of Machu Picchu in Peru. Mexico's Xanjan Itza pyramid down the bottom right there. And the Colosseum in Rome. At that time, it could handle a crowd anywhere from 50 to 80,000 people. And then the India's Taj Mahal. These are some that label and recognize these as the seven wonders of the world, wonders that you've got to see at some point, and the awesome creation that man is able to create, these massive structures. Now, in our more modern, recent history, there are other structures that are taller, that are amazing, you know, bridges and towers that are being built, and there's these structures that people are always trying to build the next tallest or biggest or most unique structures. And even though the pyramids of Giza are still the ones that kind of get this honorary recognition as being an honorary wonder of all time that's still standing, there is still something greater, an awesome wonder structure that I believe that is more amazing than any of these. And it's the wonder of the empty tomb. An awesome wonder that you've got to see. You've got to look into. You've got to know about. Because what man has done here and what the Lord has done here is an awesome, awesome wonder. And I want you to imagine this awesome wonder. The awesome wonder that as women were going to this tomb expecting to see the tomb closed, expecting to find the body of their Lord, and coming there with burial spices to care for the body, were left in wonder when they came and the stone was rolled away and the body was not there. And in their wonder, angels appear. And at the appearing of angels, they're frightened. They're frightened at their appearing and they fall down, but the angels weren't there to scare them. They weren't there to frighten them. They were there to comfort them and to teach them, to reveal what has happened here at this wonder. Why they're wondering about this and what the new reality is at this time. And the angels come beside them and they begin to teach them and they begin to talk to them and they teach them with words that maybe at first sound challenging, saying, why do you look for the living among the dead? Challenging them. Well, they didn't come to look for the living. They came to look for the dead. But why do you look for the living among the dead? To plant this thought that something is living in this place. Something is living that came out of this place of the dead. And then they give them encouragement, saying, he is not here. He is risen. And they begin to wonder some more about this awesomeness of the reality of what is happening before them, what has already happened before their arrival. And then they say, remember how he told you that he must be handed over to sinful men and he must be crucified and on the third day be raised again. And they were filled with an awesome wonder. And filled the awesome wonder. And what was the awesome wonder here? There's the awesome wonder of the empty tomb. But then I'm thinking there's the awesome wonder of the angels. Was it the angels that was the wonder? Was it the angels that was the majestic thing? You know, there was no doubting, though, in this time about angels. Throughout the Old Testament, you see the work of angels as God's messengers, as God's servants. And when you think of God, you have to think of angels. If you think of angels, you have to think of God, because they are one. They're together. You know, there are not very many believers that don't believe in angels. And so the wonder was not about the angels. You know, we see angels appearing in the birth narratives of the angels approaching Mary. And again, she's afraid, and they say, do not be afraid. And they give the message of how she would be a servant. The Lord will come through her. And here at the resurrection, again, the angels appear. And yes, they are frightened, but then they give comfort and give instruction. And I don't know how you feel about if someone says, I saw an angel. Or I think it was an angel that did this or led me or helped me. Well, one of the podcasts I was listening to on that trip back up to the Amhill this week, this teacher was talking about him and his wife made a trip to Italy. And they were going to do some research and see some of the lands that in Rome that the Lord talked about and visited. And he was going there, and that Paul was actually the Lord, not the Paul, was going and visited some parts in Rome. And So they get to Rome, and I'd never been to Italy. I've never been to that area. But they said the area they were at, the roads just seemed to be circle after circle, very cylindrical. And they had a map to get from the airport across this maze and map of this mess of roads to get to their hotel. And they were driving in their rent-a-car, and they were driving along, and they were getting turned around, and it seemed like they were going in circles and not getting anywhere. So they stopped the car, they get out, they kind of take a breath, they open their map, and they're trying to make sense of this, and then a man comes up. And between broken Italian and broken English, the man says, between broken, again, language barriers, says, I know where that's at. I can take you there. Let me ride with you. And they said, sure. They're at a loss. Let the man jump in the back seat. And then sure enough, with very, you know, the man knew his way around, knew when to turn left, when to turn right, and got them right to the hotel. And they get there, and they're thinking, there's no way we could have ever found this. There's no way we could have ever made it here. And they're breathing a sigh of relief, and they get out of the car. They've been taking their bags out, and they look up to tell thank you to the man, and he was gone. And he says, it was an angel among us that led us there. Now, whether that's an awesome wonder to you or not, that wasn't the awesome wonder of the empty tomb. The awesome wonder was not, yes, that was would have been awesome to see an angel, but angels are among us. But the awesome wonder was no doubt the empty tomb. And picking up in Luke 24, verse 9, the women come back from the tomb. They told all these things to the 11 and all the others. It was Mary Magdalene. It was Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. They're filled with this awesome wonder, left with lots of questions and lots of confusion, perhaps, but clarity from the voice of from the message of angels saying, he is not here. He is risen. Remember, he told you this would happen, that he would die, be crucified, be buried, and raised again. He's risen, and now they have been filled with this awesome wonder, and they rush and go to their, together they go, this group of women, go together to their community of believers. They go to where the 11 apostles are, and they come before them, and they tell them this good news. They tell them about this awesome wonder that they have seen. I mean, this thing is so awesome that everybody has got to know. You've got to see this. You've got to hear this. The tomb was empty. We went there. The tomb was empty. And angels appeared and said, he's not here. He's risen. And remember, the Lord told us this would happen. And it's happened. And they tell this awesome wonder. Now, what do they really know at this point? They've known the tomb was empty. They know by what they hear. They remember what the Lord said. But do they have all the answers here? No. They haven't even seen Jesus with their own eyes to verify it. But they know. What they do know is that the tomb was empty. What they do know is that angels spoke to them. What they do know is what the Lord had said would happen, and it happened. But what does this mean? This means Jesus is Lord. That means he's conquered death. That means there's hope. That means the story didn't end on the cross. The story didn't end in the grave. We've always trusted Jesus, and we trust him now today. We trusted that when he said this would happen, it's going to happen, and now it's happening among us, and they have faith, and they believe, and they go and tell. And they go to their own community first. They go to the ones that they know the most here, the ones that were with Jesus, the one that seemed like this would be their safety net, the ones that would first easily accept this gospel, this new news. They go there, 24:11. They told this to the apostles, but the apostles, they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. I mean, can you blame them? They've heard the same message, but I mean, even Jesus saying, I'm going to die and raise again. That's crazy talk. That's nonsense. I mean, for us, it's not crazy because, yeah, this is us. We're here. We know that. But there, that's crazy. It's nonsense. They didn't believe the women who was amongst them, the ones that they were closest to, the ones that they were in relationship, maybe these women were always crazy. I don't know. But I don't think they were. They weren't that crazy. These were the very first Wonder Women. Very first Wonder Woman that saw this awesome wonder and let everybody know that the Lord is risen. But see, the apostles didn't believe it. It seemed like nonsense because it's not possible. Even though the Lord said this, it ain't possible. We saw Him get crucified. You know, the Romans were really good at carrying out a complete crucifixion. When someone was sentenced to death, they must die. And if they're not dead, you keep killing them until they're dead. And they knew that, and they saw that. If a Roman didn't carry out his task of killing a criminal, he would be punished. People don't come back from being crucified. So who's crazy here? Who's out of their minds here? The apostle thinking, no, it's not possible. My view of what is reality and what is possible and what God is all about and what this is what's going to happen here is it's not possible. But you see, they doubted together. They're in this group, and one of them we'll see jumps up. But at first, they're in this crowd, this community, and this thought comes up, this reality comes up, this challenge comes up. And together they hear this, what sounds like a hopeless thought, a foolish wish, and a false reality. This is nonsense. And really, the idea of resurrection today does sound pretty crazy, doesn't it? We can accept it because we know of one who did, and we have faith and trust and hope in that reality. We're here because of that. And people have given their lives for that and continue to give their lives for that. But if someone was to rush in here and says someone has been raised, that's crazy. But the women don't care. They come and tell it anyway. They let it be known. You got to see this. There's nothing going to stop. But it happened. He's risen. This is what happened. But they doubt together. But then we get to verse 12. But Peter, however, he remembered. Peter remembered. And what did he remember? He remembered as the women are telling them. Remember, the angel said, remember how he said this? Peter's gone back to that moment. He goes, yeah, I remember when he said it, and I remember what I did. When the Lord said, I must be handed over to sinful men, and that I'm going to die and be crucified and be raised again, I stood up and I said, no, may not be, Lord. I'm not going to let you be taken. And then I remember what the Lord said to me next. Get behind me, Satan. Oh, yeah, I remember. And he says, no, this must happen. You're only thinking of things that men think of. This is something of God. And see, now he's thinking of God. But the other apostles, they're only thinking of what's possible for men. They're not thinking about what's possible for God. But Peter remembers. Peter's, no. This is it. Peter is thinking of things of God. He hears this awesome announcement. And now he's caught up in this awesome wonder. And he wants to be a part of this awesome reality. And what does he do? He runs. He sprints. He runs straight to the tomb, leaving nothing behind, running over women and children and anybody in the way. Getting to that tomb, and when he gets to the tomb, he peers in, bends over. He sees the strips of linen. And he went away wondering to himself what had happened. Can you imagine when he peered into that tomb and hearing all the things, remember what had been told to him? He's thinking now, feel like he's thinking from the right mind for the first time that this is something of God. And he gets there and he sees it with his own eyes and his only strips of linen. How perhaps his world began to turn. He could see the linens that once were around the dead body of Christ, and now they are loose. There was a time when my reality was turned upside down. I was looking at something that I didn't think was even possible. The summer before Leah and I got married, I was interning at a church in Kalispell, Montana, northeast Montana. Worked there for 2 summers. Leah was back at York in Nebraska. She was working in York for the summer, and we were apart the whole summer. We had planned to be that way. But, of course, we got engaged the spring before, and then we were separated. And you can imagine what we did every night, how much money we spent on phone calls. And we traded off. You call tonight, I'll call tomorrow. And we had our appointed time that we were supposed to call. You know, so that, you know, we had different schedules and there was an hour difference. And, okay, 7 o'clock is the time. We're going to call at this time. You're calling me. And then each time, if there's a plan for the next day, we'd make sure the time was held apart that we could have that those phone conversations. Well, there was a night that it was a weekend that didn't have anything planned for the youth that weekend. Had just gotten back from camp, so we're kind of on a low weekend. And the host family that I stayed with, she said, "Hey, why don't you come out tonight to this other friend's cabin? They had a lake house out on Flathead Lake, and we had some other activities out there before." And she said, "We're just going to have a little small dinner. You should come out." And I said, "Well, no, I got something important to do at 7. I got a phone call coming." And so they said, "Well, you know, whatever, we're just coming out, no big deal, coming out to relax. And so if you want to come out anytime, just come out, you know, come out." And so I'm waiting around 6:59, 7 o'clock, call. And I call Leah, and it's before cell phones, okay? I actually lived in the time before cell phones too, okay? And called her apartment, and her roommate answered the phone. And I says, "Leah's there." She says, "No, she's not here." I'm like, "You kidding me? Where's she at?" "Well, she's at work." I'm like, "Are you serious? This was our time to call. Like, she didn't tell me she was going to take some extra hours and she was going to go to work and do this." And so I said, "Okay. Well, have her call me when she gets back. And when does she get off work?" "Well, she's working till midnight." I'm thinking, "Oh, great. That's really late. So, okay, call me back. I'll be ready. I'll be back, you know, by 11. So I'm sad, disappointed, frustrated, and she's in Nebraska, I'm in Kalispell, Montana, and thinking, "Well, I guess I'll go hang out with these middle-aged ladies." It's at Flathead Lake, you know. I became friends with them. It was my second summer with them, so I became friends with them, and very peaceful. They have, you know, spots you could sit out in the water and waddle out there, and, you know, does she loves me not. When I get there, and I'm taking my sweet time driving out, it's about a 20-minute drive out to the Flathead Lake, and pull up to the house. Everything's kind of dark, you know, just see a couple lights in the house, knock on the screen door, and they say, "Come in," and open the screen door, and there's Leah sitting across the room, and I was mad. I had this look on my face like, in my whole world, and there it was, reality, there before me. She was supposed to be in Nebraska. She stood me up. She went to work. There's no way she could be here, and there she is. And she stands up, and everything is just spinning. This is impossible. This can't be real. This cannot be happening. And it was before my eyes. She was there. And after it spun around a few more times, I had to run towards her. It was an awesome wonder. It was impossible. There's no way she could have been there, and she was there. It's an awesome wonder that the tomb was empty. The Lord's body was supposed to be in the tomb, but it wasn't there. And the women had to tell. And Peter had to run to the tomb to see with his own eyes and to touch with his own hands. The only thing he could touch was the linens and this new reality. And he was left with this wonder. And this wonder was not a wonder that left him empty, but a wonder that he had to go and tell. He had to continue to pursue the Lord and find the Lord. And he gets to see the Lord again. And this awesome wonder leads him to then tell others about this awesomeness. And we know of his speech in Acts chapter 2. And he's speaking to now all that could hear, all the crowds that could hear. And he says, "Men of Israel, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man credited to God, by God to you by miracles, wonders and signs which God did among you through him. As you yourselves know, this man was handed over to you by God's set purpose and foreknowledge, and you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. It was impossible. Because the new what is possible and what is the reality, life after death, resurrection, is now what is possible for all. And how? By the power of God. And what does that mean about Jesus? That Jesus is Lord. He is Savior. He has power over death. And what is the response to that? Obedience. Obedience. Because salvation, and for who? Salvation for everyone who believes. So seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Peter ran into the wonder, and then he took that wonder and he runs into the world to tell the world about the risen Lord. Well, we're on this road together. This road that started from the empty tomb. And it's gone. And we're on this road of resurrection. The gospel is an awesome wonder. But how will you respond? How are you responding to this new reality of the risen Lord? Are you responding in doubt? Like the 11 going, this isn't possible. There's no way. This can't be it. Well, it's it. Or are you responding by running? I invite you, invite us, let's move towards together. Let's run together. Let's run this life together, this resurrected life together. We may be thinking, there's a lot of impossibilities, though. There's a lot of difficulties that are in my life that really can God overcome all the impossibilities, all the difficulties of my life? Can what happened at the tomb free me from the burdens that I have, the choices I've made, the addictions that I have, the choices that I've got myself, what people have done to me? Can the Lord overcome that? The tomb is empty. It's an awesome wonder. So let's join in that awesome wonder. Let's join together as a community. This message started with a group of women telling the community of the apostles, and then them going out and telling all that they knew. There is life, there is healing, there is hope. Maybe you think, well, running's really kind of an impossibility right now. You know, I'm not much of a runner. And I'm really, you know, I've been kind of out for a while. I've kind of living in doubt and shame and guilt and fear. Well, let's walk. Let's take one step at a time. And let's take this. Do we have to have all the answers? No. But what we do know is that Jesus died and rose again. And we have life in him. He conquered death. And so if he can conquer death, he can conquer anything for you, for me, for all that you know. So this morning I invite you, if you're on this road and you're thinking, well, I'm not really running, I'm kind of out, let's talk about that and let's walk together. Let's share that. There's some difficulties, some challenges that I'm having a hard time seeing how the Lord can transform and redeem and get me out of. Well, the Lord can and he will. And we can do that together. So this morning, what is your response to the empty tomb? You're going to share? You're going to doubt? Or you're going to walk from this day to tell the world of the awesome wonder of Christ? Come, let's walk and run together as we stand and sing.